Pentagon planners say they need $38 billion more in 2016 than they got in this year's budget if the department is to properly provide national defense. But recent reports from the Congressional Research Office and the Government Accountability Office paint quite a different picture. So who's right? Well, Jacob Marks is a defense analyst for the Project on Government Oversight. He joins me now to help sort through these conflicting reports. Jacob, good morning. Thanks for being on.
Hey, Tom. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we should point out, I guess POGO thinks that the Pentagon is probably overstating its requirements. Is that basically the point of view that you're coming from?
Yeah, I think the last year the Pentagon was funded at $496 billion plus a $50-plus billion war account. So that was enough to take care of national security needs. This year, Pentagon has capped at the same level, approximately the same amount of war funding, and saying without a $38 billion increase, there's no way we can meet our missions. And I don't think anyone thinks that things are the same now as they were a year ago. We've got ISIS reinforcing NATO allies in Europe, but those operations combined have cost less than $4 billion. So that leaves about 90% of that $38 billion increase unexplained.
Now, the Pentagon has been saying that since the sequester hit it a couple of years ago, it has not had sufficient funds for training and maintaining readiness. And what about that question, and how is it possible to assess that externally?
Well, it's hard. Without access to classified documents, we don't have the full picture. But we can look at historical statements, like I just mentioned, and we can look at budgets over a period of time. And right now, the Pentagon is funded about where it was during the Korean War. Since then, there have been two major budget events, Vietnam and the Reagan buildup. And as a percentage of the starting point, the Pentagon expanded by more and contracted by less for Iraq and Afghanistan than either of those events. So the question is, if DoD's funding has stayed elevated, but the wars are over and the force size has shrunk, then how come there's not enough money? And one other point is sort of to think of it in terms of how can you know what DOD has or doesn't have. DOD doesn't even know what it has or doesn't have. It's been 25 years since the law requiring the Pentagon to audit itself was passed, and the Pentagon still can't pass an audit.
Now, a couple of the things they're asking for the coming year relate to platforms. They want to continue on the F-35 gambit, which I guess you could argue has been a partial success, I guess, if you're charitable, and maybe not so much if you don't like that program. But they're also asking for the initiation of a new strategic bomber of some kind, and also shipbuilding. And so it seems like there's a lot of platform requests coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anyone interested in this topic, I'd recommend reading Gordon Adams, the former defense OMB director, wrote a column last week that explains a lot about how the military may have planned to buy things with money it wasn't sure it was going to have. And now there's an issue of if this $38 billion increase doesn't happen, how do you do all these things without that money that you've planned to have? And the Congressional Research Service has raised this point in a different way, arguing that if the Pentagon were to, for example, cut back the delay the F-35, which is 7 years late, it's doubled in cost, it's the most expensive weapons program ever, that it might have money for some of these other more immediate needs.
And what about the idea of Europe? I mean, just the other day, Ashton Carter said, we don't want another Cold War or another hot war with Russia, but we can't back off from NATO commitments. And so is the specter of whatever might happen in Eastern Europe and maybe Western Europe something that should figure into their planning?
Well, I think that it already does. I mean, one would assume so, with being the Pentagon and having such a large budget, that is something that's already addressed within the base budget. And like I said, the contingency operations in the last year have only cost $1 billion. So, well, I don't think anyone questions that that's important. It doesn't explain the size of the increase that's being requested.
And when Congress looks at these, I mean, clearly there are at least two or maybe three schools of thought within Congress, because not even within the two parties, people don't agree completely. There are some people say, yeah, we got to put as much as we can into the OCO and so the base budget can stay under sequestration. Others say, forget about it. But does anybody start with a philosophic point of view or a view of what the posture of defense ought to be before arriving at a budget, or is it purely politics?
Well, that's a big question. I think people much smarter than myself would have trouble answering it. I would say that, you know, from Pogo's perspective, regardless of the answer to that question, we're looking at ways to cut down on waste and abuse within the Pentagon budget. And regardless of what that national strategy is, there are a lot of them. So you raised the OCO. What's going to happen with this $38 billion? Either it's going to be cut or it's going to go – it's going to trigger sequestration, or it's going to go into the war funding account. And so from our perspective, we see that as very problematic because the OCO has frequently been abused and spent that money has been spent on things that have nothing to do with war. According to the Congressional Research Service, the Pentagon spent $71 billion in war funding on non-war programs between 2001 and 2014. And that included billions of dollars in Air Force equipment that's classified, billions of dollars in repairs, money for Iron Dome in Israel, and all these things are important, obviously. But it's very difficult for us to answer those big questions without knowing what we're currently spending and ensuring it's being spent in the ways it's supposed to. For example, Central Command, the combatant command that deals with Iraq and Afghanistan and the rest of the Middle East, most of its base budget is in OCO. So it's very hard to plan long term when this is the way that Congress and the military are spending their already enormous budget. It's not sustainable over the long term, and I think that this current debate is sort of bringing that issue to the fore.
We're speaking with Jacob Marks, a defense analyst at the Project on Government Oversight. And so it sounds like there almost needs to be some kind of a commission on counting so that at least people are all talking about the same thing. And the Pentagon knows what it has, and everyone else knows what it has before any kind of intelligent debate can begin on how big the whole thing should be.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, an audit would be is an extremely important goal for DoD to be able to meet, and I believe the Secretary of Defense has set a date in the next few years, although I can't remember off the top of my head what it is. But even without a sort of big 10,000-foot level commission, there are things that the Congressional Research Service and the GAO have sort of pointed out, not just program savings, like you mentioned before with the F-35, but things like force compensation reform or base realignment and closures, or the GAO in a recent report pointed out that DoD still hasn't studied what happened with sequestration the last time. And if that's what this is really all about, then it would be incumbent on DoD to understand the impact sequestration has had in the past. I mean, it's, according to GAO, they actually ended up spending more money with some of their supposed savings than actually saving any.
And you touched on something that has been in the news a lot, and also there was a major report on this, a major study commissioned by the administration on healthcare costs and the future of those. And there were a long list of recommendations that pretty much got ignored when even the Defense Department itself says this is a great way to save big dollars in the long run, which is the health care costs, not so much of veterans and service members, but families and, people that are ancillary to the entire enterprise.
Military health care is not my area of expertise, but I can say that there are many ways in which Congress and DoD work at cross purposes in the defense area. So, for example, the request this year inside that $38 billion, that includes 12 F-18s that weren't requested, a whole bunch of F-35s, a whole bunch of National Guard modernizations that weren't requested by DoD that congressmen have stuffed into this $38 billion that, as far as we can tell, isn't going to be funded. So, healthcare reform is absolutely something that needs to happen. It's not a unique example of the legislature and the executive working against each other on these issues.
And what about the whole pivot to Asia? That seems to be more of a slogan than anything that is expressed in the budget. Does it show up at all in the 2016 request?
It's hard to say. My personal opinion is that we'll believe it when we see it.
Because the shipbuilding levels that have been stated for some time by the Navy are not there in the budget either. And so there seems to be a lot of disagreement over what the size of the Navy should be, because each ship, those are expensive, and they're expensive to sustain and maintain in the long term. And so is there a clear picture in 2016 and beyond emerging of what the Navy size should be?
Well, I think that's one of the issues, one of the bigger picture issues facing the military right now. The National Sea-Based Deterrence Fund, as your listeners may know, was created outside of the Navy shipbuilding budget in order to allow the Navy to build new nuclear missile subs without taking a chunk out of the rest of the fleet, which on the one hand may make sense, but on the other hand, it is, you know, the nuclear missile subs have always been built within the Navy's budget, and it creates a number of the same problems as the OCO, where there's less oversight, it's more difficult for independent and government watchdogs to make sure that spending is happening in a responsible way. And in this year's NDAA, the language is expanded to include not just nuclear missile subs, but attack submarines and any other nuclear-powered vessel. So that raises the question in technical terms and just bigger picture and vernacular, what is a national asset? I mean, isn't everything the Pentagon buys a national asset? Isn't everything taxpayer dollars is spent on a national asset? So I think that, you know, reinforces your question of, you know, do we need to take a step back and ask if we are thinking in a realistic way long term about what we can spend. I mentioned the $496 billion figure earlier. That's just the Pentagon's budget. We spend about $1 trillion total per year on the intelligence community, the Pentagon, and Veterans Affairs put together, in addition to assorted other things. That's a ton of money to spend every year, and as a country, it's probably important that we evaluate whether that's something we can sustain over the long term.
All right. I guess that goes for CMS spending and a whole lot of other things, about pretty much everything they have control over except for the interest on the debt.
That's right.
All right. Well, that's for another day. Jacob Marks is defense analyst for the Project on Government Oversight. Thank you for sharing that point of view.
All right. Thanks, Tom.